And I must applaud Phyllis for training her students so well. I think they're doing remarkable work. I'm very impressed. Their enthusiasm and maturity and talent. I have a press release there that Carrie put together from bits and pieces I've been thinking about regarding textiles. I really always feeling dualistic almost about what it is that I do, because I was trained in a very ritualistic way in Sweden. My Finnish background comes from my mother's side. Her maiden name was Jesselinen, and her family came from Karelia, so they were expelled from there, as many other Finnish people when the Russians took over. And most of the family stayed in Finland, but my grandfather came over. And so my mother was born here in Sweden. Based on background in, on my mother's side, and we have a similar background, and we're both interested in how we can fit that into our cultural background and heritage, which is very interesting. My work for this exhibition is divided into that dualistic conundrum that I feel always, being trained very traditionally, but also using the two-form non-traditional work. And because we are trained to be almost reverential about some fibers and only use natural fibers, I've mixed them on purpose in many of these pieces. But in the little series of reeds that you see, in an exaggerated fashion around the world, I think of them as landscapes. I really have stuck to the traditional linen warp and all wool pile, and we weavers become very attached to our yarn. And I must say, I'm using up yarns I've sat on for a couple of decades now. Some of them are hand spun, others are yarns you don't even find any longer. I know each one of them. It's like those of you who do patchwork, you know where each little bit of cloth came from. So they do represent intimate feelings. But I also think of, you know, that subdivision of a square into four squares as a very important geometric composition, and I see them as landscapes. Each one is a small landscape, and if you've gone around, maybe you've seen there's a little recessed red dot in each one of them. That's what I call the infrared dot. That's nearly hidden, but it's those red beams that permeate our lives these days. Remember all our cell phones, all those clocks on the radios, and even the beams from lasers, gun sights, even maybe. So those red dots that we think of as urban, they really are in the landscape too. So I wanted them to be little surprises, and perhaps you have to dig for them to find them. And then there is a series of what I think of as tree forms in the double cross technique, where you read two layers. The finish. Traditional double leaf technique, you know, is a pickup pattern that you figure out. But I sort of combine the transparency technique, so heavier elements woven into the sheer background. And I thought it was interesting how you see those intersections as you walk around. And my next step with that series is to do triple leaf, you know, six layers. That's even more fun. So they are actually in the four seasons idea. So the spring, the summer, fall over there, and winter over there. How corny can you get? So the third series is inspired by an exhibition at the Indian Modern Art recently, of the painter Morandi. No, sorry, the Metropolitan Museum. The painter Morandi, who is a master artist, they will generate a way of representing Simba. He used the same sort of vessel ship for a 30-year period and just rearranged them a little bit. I'm thinking at the same period in vessel. So you see one of them there and another group in Russia is putting the other group out in the corner. But I did those in a braiding technique, of the technique, and having a band that then could be reduced at coiling so you could form vessels that way. Almost like throwing a pot. For those, I used a wire that's covered with satin, so it's nice and shiny, and you can bend it, and just like in this piece. When you get a little bit late, you can twist them right back up again so they get perkier. this is actually belonging to an earlier series when I was doing elemental work, meaning that I took the very most basic ways of dealing with thread and yarn. I call these endless columns. I think of them as Brancusi's idea of the pulsating columnar forms that go up to heaven. And I think of them in a way as umbilical cords too, because each little edge is twisted and connected to the next one, to the next one, and then they're connected with these fly splitting, in other words, bending them apart and inserting and connecting, again, that kind of satin-covered wire that they handle for the purpose. I don't know if there is anything particular you're interested in hearing about. I welcome your questions if you have any. Where have you lived?
Where
were you born? I was born in Linköping, Sweden, which is near Gothenburg. I grew up in Uppsala. And after that, I've lived in India and in New York since 1969.
Okay.
And continue to work with all of those things that Carrie mentioned. But now, luckily, I'm only working part-time as a faculty member at FIT and a couple of other schools, so I can devote more time. I have hundreds of pounds and kilos of yarn that I intend to do something with. I had done fashion in terms of interior design, not fashion clothing. I worked for several companies. I had my own freelance business as well. But my first job when I came to New York in 69 was to be taken on as a part-time helper for a company called Jacqueline R. Larson. He's a Danish-American interior designer who has still a very successful company that primarily produces furnishing material, but also furniture itself. We had the carpeting line also. So I worked there in the 70s, and I just come from India where I was in the Peace Corps, so I always say the best schooling I got was first in the Peace Corps, and my second best education was working for Jack Larson's company, because we did so many super quality, high-end, both collections for, you know, purchase for interiors, but special commissions as well. We did big opera curtains for places like Phoenix Opera House and Sears, ordering a big suite of hangings for their corporate headquarters and so on. So they were one of a kind as well as production. And then I worked for an Irish company called John Ford in Madden. And
two freelance, my own freelance company. I worked for nearly all of the days in the interior design company.
I think you've been looking at your work, you know, obviously For Mom is extremely important to you, structurally and otherwise. Could you speak a little bit about color and color choice?
Maybe that is also linked to interiors, because they're always forms that you have to think of, chromatic sequences, and if you have a choice of using five colors, five shades of the same color, do that rather than using just one. So the idea of blending many kindred colors together and make subtle transitions, I'm fond of doing that. So it's a very cheap trick, you might say, but I always do that. And I do like fairly strong chroma. In these pieces, I've been thinking a lot of the Finnish landscape. There is the mushrooms in the forest, and water, of course, and different times of day. I think also in the atomic factor, color is very strong, like those pieces over there. Do you know the background they have? Why is Mommy's dress, the traditional dress, is so colorful? Bright blue, red, yellow, green. They were hunters that provided, in the medieval period, all of Europe with fancy pelts of wild animals, you know, so fox and otter and those, squirrels by the ton. Let me digress a little bit. It was high fashion in the Middle Ages to have fur-lined garments. And if you had a mantle, which is basically a half circle, it took about 200 squirrel pelts to line a mantle like that. So the Sami were excellent hunters and trappers, and they sent a lot of pelts down to Middle Europe and were able to get the fine woolen in return, bright colors. That was, of course, the highest quality fabric at the time, and they were able to show that off against their, you know, for the farmer neighbors who were clod hoppers and could never afford fine clods like that. So that it really remained strong with the Sami culture, having brighter colors, strong chroma, coloring.
The Ryu has a strong tradition in Finland and in India as well. Could you speak a little bit about what do you think of Ryu or what?
Well, first of all, these are very exaggerated. I'm sure you see really that are much more controlled, lower fire. Now, and then also, if these were put on the floor, they wouldn't lie flat. And that's anathema in Finnish reading. They have a nice and flat on the floor. So these have too much fire and too long fire. And they're really, in Finland, I think it's a bit earlier than the Rii used in Sweden, and you know that they were used for bedding, right? Not for floor covering. And they were particularly good for people who were fishermen. They were out, you know, day and night in these drafty boats, so to have a Rii or two with the pile to the inside. You know, the pile was usually not even well designed, it was just there to provide warmth. Like, bed covers, like blankets to sleep on. And later on they became more ornamental and the pile was turned to the front. There are even some leaves that have pile both to the front and back. One is sometimes more decorative, that's the show side, and the other is the cleaner, and that's just for the warmth, you know, to wrap yourself in. It's like having fur both to the inside and outside. Which, by the way, the Sami had, you know, they had reindeer garments that had fur both to the inside and outside, and kept them toasty warm in the cold weather. And, Felix, were you thinking of something else about that?
I remember hearing stories when I first started working at the Heritage Center that when Finland was a part of Sweden, it was an early form of taxation that every home had to provide a Rii that was given as an issue to each soldier. Each soldier had their own Rii, which was their kind of mantle. It was very early, like 1700s. 1600s.
I didn't know that, yeah. Actually, but it was a taxation. There are beautiful examples in the museums in Finland of early Greece, you know, often with the dates woven in, because they were later on dowry pieces that the girl would make in her home. So, anything else? There are a couple of publications.
We have, I did a full exhibit on this. We have quite a collection done in the archives that I drew from and then borrowed some from different places. So this is a really nice continuation.